Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm presenting today about RDF canonicalization, which is an extremely exciting technology, one of many to come from the World Wide Web Consortium. And it affects how big data is secured. RDF is a framework for expressing data which is distributed and yet linked. When you usually create a database, you have a schema which tells you what properties mean. But problems come when you try and share these schemas with other people, because other people have different databases and they don't know what your properties mean. To link databases together, you can use RDF, which is Resource Description Framework. So the fundamental principle of RDF is that you're describing resources. Resources can be something real, like myself. They can be something fictional, a fictional character. They can be a digital resource, such as a web page. They can be a physical resource. And the reason why this is so broad as a category, why so many things can be part of the universe of discourse, as it's known in RDF, is that it allows RDF to be universal to any kind of data that you might want to express. The distinctions between concrete, physical, abstract, conceptual, are human ones. To RDF, they don't exist. An RDF resource is identified by its IRI, which is an internationalized resource identifier. You may hear people talk about URIs or UIs. That's Uniform Resource Identifier, and it's essentially the precursor, the predecessor of IRIs. IRIs are URIs that can be expressed in multiple human languages, Chinese script, for example. And one IRI I have here on the screen is from Wikidata. This is the Wikidata IRI for this FOSDEM conference. So when you're talking about FOSDEM in an RDF dataset, in an RDF database, you can use this identifier so that anyone can work out via Wikidata what FOSDEM is. The second fundamental principle of RDF is that it's a technique for expressing graph databases. Graph databases are composed of statements. And the statement which I have here on the screen is that FOSDEM 2024, that's the Wikidata IRI at the very top there, Q11, etc., is an instance of FOSDEM, the series of conferences. That's a fact that you express using RDF, and that's how it looks like in a triple. So a triple is subject and the attribute and the value. Subject, FOSDEM 2024. Attribute is the Wikidata for is an instance of, and in this case, the value is FOSDEM, the series of conferences. So the biggest collections of RDF datasets, the biggest series of terms, are collaboratively created. The biggest of all time is Wikidata, and it's very hard to count when you've got that many terms, when that many statements, but it's something around 1,500 million RDF statements. The rules for inclusion of a fact in Wikidata are extremely broad. It's mostly the same as Wikipedia. As long as it's notable, it can be included. And one place that you've used Wikidata, whether or not you know it, is in OpenStreetMaps. Because with OpenStreetMap, you can have Wikidata labels on places to further enrich the data. So the tram stop just outside this university is identified on OpenStreetMap through its Wikidata label, and therefore you can find pictures of it, you can find the timetables, and that's one example where the distributed nature of RDF shows its value. Wikipedia doesn't know about OpenStreetMap, and yet through this common technology of RDF, they can use the same terms, and users can essentially link between the two worlds. Another collaboratively created data set of RDF is Music Brains, which has about 100 million statements, and that's musical artists, musical tracks, musical albums. And all of these are linked together with statements much like the ones you've already seen. An artist is a member of a band. That's that triple. Subject, the artist, attribute, member of, value is the band. And I have to say here that Music Brains isn't completely RDF compatible. There was an attempt called Linked Brains, and that's in 2011 to try and create full RDF compatibility, but that never quite came to fruition. So when you use Music Brains, it's kind of 90% RDF compatible. The data model is all there, but there are some limitations. And that's partly because a lot of these early collaborative databases, the wikis, started at about the same time that RDF was being invented. So they haven't really had much time to sort of familiarize themselves with RDF before that first came on the scene. You'll find a lot smaller but more numerous RDF datasets from national governments. Most member states of the European Union produce data which they provide free and open source on the internet. Many of these are in RDF directly. You can download them, you can use them with an RDF data store, you can run queries on them. And where the data isn't RDF inherently, the portal for the European Union data is always RDF metadata compatible. So you can at least use RDF to categorize the data you have, even if not directly analyze it. The serialization of RDF is an important factor, because earlier in the talk I showed you that statement in the triple format. It's just an IRI, IRI, IRI. And I don't know about you, but I'm not very good at looking at millions of IRIs and working out what they all mean. And that's the reason why various serialization formats exist. These allow you to do things like create a common prefix to the IRIs. It makes it easier to look at when they're in perhaps a more familiar representation, something that you might see in a standard like non-RDF JSON format. So a few have been invented. RDF, XML RDF is one of the ones you've probably seen. It was one of the first, I believe. And it allows you to use XML to encode RDF. More recently, Turtle and JSON-LD are also alternatives that you can use. The intention of serialization formats is that they never change the data. That inherently, if you have one serialization format and you have data encoded in it, you can convert it to any other without losing the semantic detail of what you're describing. If I talk about FOSDEM in XML RDF, I should be able to convert that to Turtle and still have the same semantic meaning that, for instance, FOSDEM 2024 is an instance of FOSDEM. I can put that in JSON, XML, or Turtle. In practice, though, there are some difficulties when converting between formats. And this is where one might get the first inkling that there is a problem. There are many different ways to serialize the same data into the same format. Tabs versus spaces. Line endings. You can have Windows-style line endings or Unix-style line endings. And with the capability to abbreviate IRIs, such as how JSON-LD, Turtle, RDF-XML do. You can do it in multiple different ways depending on what makes sense to the people looking at the data, the humans. Cryptographic signatures, however, hashes used for securing data sets, want to have a series of bits. They want to be able to look through each bit and calculate the hash of the piece of data. So even adding one space where you had put a tab or putting a control, control return line ending where there shouldn't have been one, changes the hash completely. Expressing it in JSON-LD and Turtle is obviously, again, going to change the hash. Even though the data you're talking about, the semantic meaning is identical. You could say that there are infinitely many ways of changing the hash, even when you're talking about the same data. You can add irrelevant comments. You can add white space where there needn't be. So if I give you a piece of RDF data, and you're trying to verify a cryptographic signature over it, all that needs to happen is one mistake or one oversight in converting between formats, and you've lost the ability to verify its authenticity. The solution to this is the RDF dataset canonicalization algorithm. The specification work started a few years ago, and it's almost drawing to its initial conclusion, that is, publication as a W3C recommendation. It needs to be voted on by the W3C members yet, but it's very close. So some context for those who aren't aware. The W3C is an open standards body. It drafts standards, it holds them to a high degree of quality based on peer review and implementation. And they're open because anyone can use them without having to pay royalties and without being restricted about where and how they use them. There are 43 active working groups in the W3C as we speak. One of these is the RDF Dataset Canonicalization and Hash Working Group, and basically its sole and primary deliverable is the specification which defines how you create a canonical version of an RDF dataset. Another working group you may be interested in is the Verifiable Credentials Working Group. It's creating a way of allowing people to issue credentials like driving licenses, visas, like university certificates and awards, and doing so in a way which is privacy respecting and entirely decentralized. You don't have to have a central database of who's been issued what. They are all independently verifiable using cryptographic signatures. It's very useful to be able to use RDF as the data format for these credentials. Again, RDF allows you to compare the terms even when you don't have the same schema as someone else does. It's fully self-describable. So that's excellent when you, for instance, want to use a passport from one country to prove your identity in the other. And that's precisely what is very likely to be the case when the European Union brings out the next version of their digital identity cards. It will almost certainly use verifiable credentials and therefore will have the capability of using RDF dataset canonicalization. There are a number of different implementations of RDF canonicalization. There are five which are currently in the test suite, which means that they are tested throughout the development process and essentially act as the check and balance to anything ambiguous in the specification. If someone adds a statement in the specification which is ambiguous, which no one can quite understand, then this will show up in the test suite because the implementations will come to different results for what's supposed to be the same calculation. And that's one of the many ways in which the standards process at the W3C keeps the quality up. And one of these is the JavaScript one, RDF Canonize. I've got an example on the next slide of how that might look in your own code. It's only a few lines long, and n quads, that variable there, is one such RDF data format. It's the most basic format, and it's almost incomprehensible for a human to read. But it's a fundamental one which shows how easy it is to use these libraries. You don't have to read the whole specification to be able to start using it to verify your own data, to put cryptographic signatures on your RDF datasets, and so on and so forth. There are some datasets which are, due to their nature, especially difficult for the RDF dataset canonicalization algorithm to process. It's that NP-hard problem. It's an inability for the computer to, in a reasonable amount of time, process how the graph is structured. If you deliberately submit such a graph to an RDF dataset processor, then you can effectively deny it of service. You can clog it up, slow it down. And that's a security vulnerability. The mitigation, effectively, is just to add a limit on how long a calculation can run. It's not very elegant, but it's the only thing which is mathematically provable to work at this point. Luckily, however, the academic research suggests that this isn't going to be a particularly big problem in practice. So if you're consuming RDF datasets from, as we said, Wikidata, from nation states of the European Union, from other national governments, then you're not likely to come into these issues. The study from 2017, which slightly predates the official working group for RDF dataset canonicalization by Aidan Hogan, shows that about 10 million datasets analyzed, and there are very few problems. And I've got a link there for the entire paper if you want to see what the methodology was to get to those results. Effectively, you can assume that if you get a poison graph, it's malicious, and therefore use the limits to filter out those unwanted inputs whenever you're doing any processing on RDF datasets. If you'd like to contribute, it's definitely not too late. Even though the specification is coming up to its recommendation stage, that doesn't mean that there aren't any things that people can help with. For a start, implementations are critical. Without implementations, it's not possible to know if the specification is actually up to standard, and that's why we have those test suites. So if you want to, you can read through the whole specification, have a go at creating a library in your favorite programming language, and submit that to the website, to the test suite, and you can help contribute in that way to making sure that the quality is there before or after we go to recommendation. RDF 1.2 is a long-awaited update to that core RDF specification, the fundamental principles. It's going to come out probably in a few years' time. No one's quite sure at this point. But when it does, we'll need to update the RDF dataset canonicalization algorithm to support it. So it's very likely that in a couple of years, we'll restart the working group, even after it's been shut down, and you'll have an opportunity to join there. The W3C allows individuals to become invited experts. That's how I contribute to the W3C. Or as employees of a member organization. It can be a company, a charity, an NGO. So if you'd like to, you can contact the group contact for the W3C working group of your choice, and ask them, could I please be an invited expert? That's what I did, and it's a way to collaborate with the W3C as an individual. Or you can beg your boss to become a member as a full corporate member, which gives you voting rights, gives you voting rights in the specifications when they come to recommendation stage. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the talk, and it's given you a bit of an insight into the exciting stuff that's still going on in RDF. It's over 20 years old, but it's still improving, and how perhaps you can use this, collaborate, contribute back to it, and make everyone's RDF data sets a bit more secure.
Thanks, Sebastian. I don't think we really have time for any questions, but you could grab Sebastian afterwards if you do. Thanks.